Blog Talk Radio.
It's only 5% out of 100.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Roll with the topic, sort of like some rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
All right, everybody, the holiday season is upon us, but for the next 2 hours, you are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. Today, our five-man round table turns into a two-man desk. Mike and Mike, eat your heart out, because we're about to show you how it's done. I'm here with my partner, Jimmy Williams, and we'll hold down the fort while the brothers out handling various types of business. We still got a great show for you today. The sports week was marred by an ugly tragedy in Kansas City, so we'll discuss that and lots more during our time with you today, so you know the drill. Join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room right now at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports so you can get in on the conversations. You can call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline in about 30 minutes at 323-410-0012. Before we get to the rundown, of course, we got to shout out the fam. Make sure you listen to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. The future of sports talk radio has arrived, so make sure you check those fellas out. You can also check out Mojo and the crew of the Season Ticket on Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, also on Blog Talk Radio. Jimmy hosted with her this Monday, and the show was great, so, you know, just make sure you check that show out. You can check out the podcast. I'm about to give you that information right now. Just give me 1 second. You can catch Brandon, Chris, and Daniel, Sports Trap Radio on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on ueradiolive.com. But don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear all of our partner shows at warroomsports.blogspot.com. So make sure you check out that podcast with Mojo and Jimmy from Monday night. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com at 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. It's with a P-H, and it ends with a T, with a Z, P-H-A-T-Z radio.com. Yo, Jimmy, what's going on tonight, brother? Who's celebrating a birthday, man?
No doubt. Let's jump right into these birthdays.
My birthday!
For those
Yay!
Who don't know. Our birthday segment is brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, that includes the NFL Sunday Ticket, go to our website, warroomsports.com. Look at the DirecTV logo, click on there, because what happens is you get a special discounted War Room Sports rate. So if you're looking for, you know, cable, don't get cable. Get DirecTV at warroomsports.com. With that being said, the first birthday I want to talk about is one Matthew M. Maloney, a.k.a. Matt Maloney, turns 41.
My birthday! Yay!
Matt Maloney.
Matt Maloney, Houston Rockets, University of Pennsylvania. Matt Maloney, his time in the NBA was a surprise to me. You know, I was kind of shocked that he lasted in the league as long as he did. I mean, he was a solid point guard for the Houston Rockets at that time. But when he played at Penn, I didn't necessarily see him as, you know, a player that was going to have a decent NBA career. I remember he was on that Rockets team. It was Maloney. You had Katino Mobley at the two. At that time, that move was actually a surprise to me, too. You know, you had two Philly guys holding down the backcourt in Houston. And you had Charles Barkley and all the old guys, Olajuwon. And they had a pretty decent team. But it was just surprising to me to see Matt Maloney starting in the league on a pretty decent team like that.
Yeah, especially considering I always thought that, you know, Jerome Poole Allen was going to be the guy to come out off that team from Penn.
Exactly.
But Matt Maloney had a solid career. You know, it was very impressive to see. But again, like you said, I remember that specifically because they had all them old guys out there, like, trying to win a chip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Barkley and Olajuwon and those guys. But, you know.
Hey, Jim, but when you say Matt Maloney, you know, versus Poole Allen, I guess that shows you how much a jump shot is worth in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? Because Poole Allen could do damn near anything on the court, but his jump shot wasn't that great. So it's like if you have a solid jump shot and you can play defense, that kind of stuff keeps you in the league. I mean, I'm pretty sure Matt Maloney wasn't a better defender than Pujols.
Not at all. But if you can shoot, they'll find somewhere for you. Like they'll hide all your other deficiencies because you can shoot. You know what I mean? So that's the thing about
it. They'll play you in the starting lineup with NBA legends, even though they were on their last leg. But
absolutely, everybody needs a shooter. I remember, you know, he had a lot of open shots. And they doubled down on Olajuwon, and Barkley was open for the three.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So shout to Matt Maloney on his birthday. Let's move right on to the next birthday. That's Josh Smith, who turns a young 27.
It's my birthday! Yay!
Steph, what you got on Josh Smith?
Josh Smith, he's in Atlanta now. He's kind of charged with being the man since Joe Johnson has left the building. The highlight factory is what they call Phillips Arena down there. Josh Smith is an interesting case because when the trade rumors float, it seems like his name, and even when he became a free agent, his name is the name that a lot of good teams float around, saying that he's that type of piece that we need to maybe get over the hump and go to the next step. I mean, his name are in a lot of trade rumors even now as we speak for teams that are trying to get a little more athletic. Great defender, very athletic. But Josh, you know, I've been to several games down in Atlanta. As much as a lot of other teams covered him, I kind of noticed that the fans down there kind of get a little peeved with Josh because he likes to take more jump shots than they think he should be taking. As athletic as he is, you know, he's starting to want to sit back there and shoot a lot of threes and a lot of J's.
I mean, this is true. But Atlanta also didn't care about what you think about it. Like, Josh Smith is definitely athletic. He's definitely a very good defender. But you got to look at, you know, Joe. What happened to Joe Johnson, right in Brooklyn now. They didn't appreciate him either. But at the end of the day, that was a nice little team they had, you know. And like you said, now that Joe's gone, he's the guy. Yeah. I don't know if he could be the guy on any team. But he's definitely very athletic. I would like to see him in a Lakers uniform, considering the system they're running now. It would fit perfectly. But,
yeah, and, you know, that's one of the teams where his name always comes up. And trade rumors, like, you know, D'Antoni wants to get faster, you know, maybe Josh Smith for Pau Gasol. But, you know, we'll see what happens with him in the long run. But, like you said, the fans down there, they didn't really appreciate Joe. But we know where that stems from, you know, once he got that contract.
I mean, it comes from the money.
Too much. Yeah, yeah.
Think about Joe Johnson. I know we're not talking about Joe Johnson. If not for that contract, he would completely be looked at as a different player around the league. And even from the fans and from the media, everybody would look at him different. It's that contract hanging over his head that makes everybody look at him like, come on, man. But with that being said, like, Atlanta's not a basketball town here, but they don't deserve the Hawks anyway, so. But that's either here or there.
Damn.
That's either here or there. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about Eddie Curry, who turns 30.
Damn, Eddie Curry, 30 already?
My birthday, yay!
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how old he got, you know.
Yeah, because it seemed like he's just wasting away some good years. In the league, he came out with a lot of potential, man. There's no way you can tell me from that draft right now that Tyson Chandler should be a better player than Eddie Curry. Like, Eddie Curry has been basically, you know, accumulating splinters for the last 5 or 6 years of his career. And he was so talented. But, you know, the book out on him was that he was lazy. You know, he didn't like to come in shape. But he was supposed to be the one who came into the league with the back-to-the-basket game. He had moves. He was big. Shaq's name always came up when they talked about Eddie Curry. And, you know, there were times early when he showed a little bit of promise, but it was never consistent. So here you have it. You know, he's in and out of teams, you know. Got a ring last year with Miami, but they didn't even play him. And they don't have big men. So what did that tell you about Eddie Curry at 30 years old?
It's funny because that's been a knock on Shaq, too, but that shows you just how good Shaq was. People like to take, like, shots at Shaq and say he wasn't good or he wasn't this because he didn't get involved. But, yo, Shaq had the same habits as Eddie Curry, but the difference is Shaq used those habits and won 4 championships because he was just that good. You know, Eddie Curry,
those same habits on somebody with, like, 10 times the talent and skill, you're going to get different results. Like, Eddie was a part of that. He was a big part of that infusion of straight to from high school to the NBA You know, he was a part of that whole.
To me, that was
a bad time in basketball because the draft was more of a crapshoot than ever because you had no idea what you were really getting with these kids. You figure you give them 3 or 4 years to be good. They even get good contracts on their first re-up because you're still judging them on potential. And a lot of them, in my opinion, turned out to be busts. Like, where's Darius Miles? And he played well for a while.
Yo, it's funny because it's like people always talk about those great players that come, like the Kobe Bryants or the T-Max or even the Kevin Garnett that, you know, were drafted straight out of high school. But they never talk about the guys, Eddie Curry's or the Corleone Youngs. Remember Corleone Youngs?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys who come straight out of high school.
But Lenny Cooks.
Lenny, all these guys. You never hear about these stories. All you hear about is the, you know,
they name
the
best five, but they don't tell you about the worst 40.
Exactly. So it definitely was a bad time in terms of watching the draft. And even, I mean, because to a certain extent, this is what goes on in sports now. People aren't paid what they're worth. And people get this twisted all the time. I mean, the market in major or professional sports, whether it be the major baseball, the NBA, the NFL, the market is not about what you're worth. It's about basically your potential somewhat. And I'm going to pay you this because if I don't, somebody else will. So people always say, well, you're worth what someone's willing to give you. But people are only willing to give it to you because they know it's some dodo around there, which is why every time they have, like, you know, a lockout, I don't feel sorry for the owners because they're the ones that create it. But that's a whole other story. With that being said, see the kind of conversations that Eddie Curry brings about? Nothing positive.
Bust anyway, and overpaid and all kinds of stuff like that.
Let's talk about one James Arthur Monk, a.k.a. Art Monk, who turns 55.
It's my birthday! Yay!
When I mention Art Monk, what comes to mind?
Art Monk was a great receiver. With the first thing I always think of when I think of Art Monk is actually how long it took for him to get into the Hall of Fame. But his case, it shows you firsthand that, you know, when you have a system of subjective voters, you know, who are basically just sports fans themselves who write about the games, this is the kind of thing you'll get because, you know, they're taking things personally like every other fan out there. You know, somebody did tell us recently, shout out to Michael Tillery, he told us that there's no such thing as being objective in sports, you know, because I tried to stress to him how hard we try to do that. But then when you look at voting like this, because Art Monk wasn't exactly, you know, the most open guy to the media, these guys kind of took that personally and they forgot, you know, how good he was. When he retired, he basically had most of the receiving records. Maybe not most of them, but, you know, he had the important ones. And it took him a lot of tries to get into the Hall of Fame. And you can't say that it was off his performance. It was just off of personal feelings because he wasn't that guy that you go into the locker room with and he give you the best interview. So, you know, everything is flawed, man. It's flawed. System.
Yeah, shout out to Nyrin, because when I think about Art Monk, I think of Nyrin. Every time he's in the sports debate, he always uses Art Monk as someone who, I forgot what's the term he uses, but he says he's one of these guys that really wasn't that great, but he compiled a lot of stats from playing a long time. He thinks that Art Monk is
actually, when you say that, like, I'm in the middle with that. I don't totally disagree with him. I mean, I think Art Monk was a very good wide receiver, but When somebody brings you that point of view, I'm like,
some cats stay around for so long, they never start to just creep up there. So,
he didn't seem
know,
like he had that fear factor. Like when T.O. and Randy stepped on the field in this generation, defenses feared them. I don't think Art had that, but he was effective at what he did.
He was the Wes Welker of his time. Anyway, man, I don't like him just because he played for the Redskins. So with that being said, let's move on. And give a special shout out to some of our, you know, some of the friends and family of the War Rooms. A birthday shout out to one James Onquay and also the homie DJ Willie G, Willie Garland, out in Florida.
It's my birthday.
Happy birthday,
Willie G,
brother.
Happy birthday,
Willie.
Good
I know you
brothers.
Listen. I know you listen, and we're gonna get into the Kobe debate a little bit later on. And I know you're gonna want to call in and speak your piece about Kobe. because Willie believes that Kobe, his real last name is Naismith, and he invented basketball. So we'll get into that conversation later. With that being said, Dev, tell everybody what happened while they were on the grind.
What's wrong with Kobe Naismith? All right, everybody. While You Were on the Grind is brought to you by Bay Financial Services. Just make sure you go to our website, worldroomsports.com, click on the Sponsors tab, and then click on the Bay Financial Services logo to see what that financial company is all about. Give them a call. Help get your money back. So this week, while you guys were on the grind, we had some crazy things happening. Cubs skipper Dale Sevim, I don't even know how to pronounce his name, he was actually on a hunting trip with Hall of Fame baseball player Robin Yount, and Robert Yount accidentally shot this man in his ear while he was trying to shoot a quail. It wasn't really like a direct shot, like with the but he got shrapnel in his ear, and you know, everything was everything. He got a couple stitches and he was good. But does this remind you of anything? Like,
shout out to our former vice president. and also, you know, this is what happens when you use guns hunting, because, you know, according to Dan Patrick, white people only use guns because they hunt African Americans as part of their culture. So I guess you can still get hurt if it's not part of your culture. So, it is what it is, man.
Yeah, gun. Well, he didn't kill anybody, so I can change the quote a little bit. Guns don't hurt people. Stupid mother is what guns hurt people. Like, I don't hunt, and I'm pretty sure you don't hunt. I've never been hunting, so you know I can throw that out there before I even give an opinion on this. But I'm pretty sure that there's some protocol when you're out hunting with your friends where, you know, you may have to yell clear, four, like you're golfing, something. There has to be some protocol before you just take the gun out and shoot. So, yeah. Like, how do these accidents happen? Like, you just get overzealous because you see what you see a quail fly by, and you just pull the gun out and just shoot without telling the dude that you're with that you're about to shoot.
I'm going to tell you how it happens, man. Like, I personally don't hunt. None of my friends hunt. Or, I mean, people say we hunt, you know, hunt on the internet for women. That's another story. But what I'm saying is
I used to hunt on South Street back in the 90s.
I mean, you know, my man Willie, I know he listens, he be hunting on Instagram, but that's neither here nor there.
He be fishing. He's not a hunter, he's a fisherman.
People that I have talked to who do hunt, they look at it as, like, you know, just like when you are fishing, so to speak, you're out there drinking.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when alcohol gets involved, yeah, it's crazy. You figure that you're controlling a firearm, what are you drinking for? People go out, and I'm dead serious, they drink. Yeah, they're hunting. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's borderline. That's 50 Tyson right there.
Yeah, yeah,
shooting stuff. Yeah, there's no way you should be out there drinking and shooting guns at the same time, man.
Yeah, you might see me all blue, all red, every day. I'm 50 Tyson.
That's my man right there. All right, so the New Orleans Hornets, it was announced yesterday that starting the 2013-2014 season, they might be going by a different name. And the name that the new owner, Tom Benson, has chosen for the team is the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, as you all know, Tom Benson is the owner of the New Orleans Saints. He just recently bought the New Orleans Hornets. Okay, it's a given that, okay, there's no Hornets in New Orleans, but Pelicans, Jimmy? Like,
fly, Pelican, fly. I mean, Scarface when he was in the hot tub.
Go,
Pelican. Fly, Pelican. Yo.
Pelican.
Listen, man, I'm all for changing team names because some team names just don't make sense.
Right.
For instance, the Los Angeles Lakers. I mean, I don't know how many lakes are in Los Angeles. Or even the Utah Jazz. I don't know how much Jazz has played in Utah, but we all know how both teams got their names.
Right.
And I think they should have been changed years ago. It sounds crazy now, but I'm all for changing it. But the Pelicans, yo, seriously?
Why doesn't Tom Benson, like, try to make a deal with Utah or something? Like, you know, have them change their name and he buy the rights to the Jazz so it can go back to where it rightfully belongs, because there's no Mormons out in Utah, you know, riffing with the saxophone at a dusty nightclub. Like, it's just not happening out in Utah. Now, the whole Pelican thing is not that it doesn't make sense, because Pelicans are the state bird of Louisiana. It's on their flag. It's on their shield. But that just doesn't sound tough. Now, I mean, you've seen some Pelicans out there with attitudes, but it's just not tough. It's almost like a cardinal. That's a soft bird, even though the Arizona Cardinals try to, you know, make it look mean on their logo. That's a soft bird. I don't know, man, about the Pelicans, man. I've seen their logo. We posted on our Facebook page today, facebook.com/WarRoomSports. The logo isn't bad, but the Pelicans?
No, man, not a Pelican, though, B. Like, you got to become better than that, man. Like, call me.
You're
in
New Orleans. You're
Tremé,
Louisiana. You're down in the bayou. So if you want to be an animal and you don't want to be music-related, what about the Gators? You know what I mean? Something like that. Like, Gators bite.
Just not Pelicans, man. Like, you gotta come with something better than that. You gotta be more creative, man.
Fly Pelican.
Yo.
I can't explain it, man. Like, the dude bought his team. He wants to do what he wants. I mean, it hasn't gone through yet, but I think it's pretty much a done deal, because he's already copyrighted the name, the logo, whatever he had to do. It's already registered, so he's been wanting it. He's had this, you know, registered and done before he even purchased the team. So he was just waiting to buy a team in any sport besides the Saints, and he were going to call them the Pelicans. So it's a done deal.
Because it's a list of teams that should change their names, like, the Nets need to change their name, like, you know, to start all over. Like, the Brooklyn Nets sounds dumb as hell.
Why do you want to be the thing hanging from under the rim? Like, I don't get that either.
And plus, considering the history of the New Jersey Nets, just change that whole thing. You want to rebrand yourself as, you know, Brooklyn, like, you know what I mean? So you should be something significant with Brooklyn, you know. I mean, I don't know what that could be, you know what I mean? The only thing significant to Brooklyn to me is Biggie and Mos Def, but other than that, like, it's a lot of teams. But some of these teams just have dumb names anyway, like the Houston Texans. That's stupid.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like,
we know what Houston is.
They couldn't be more creative than that. Oh, well, from Houston.
Yeah. I mean, maybe some of our team names. Like, Kyrie's in our chat room now talking about the Flyers, even like that name. I mean, but that's Fisto, Philadelphia Flyer. That sounds right.
They
like,
fly
New Orleans,
up and down the court.
New Orleans Pelicans. That sounds dumb as hell.
Yeah, first of all, there's too many syllables in that whole name, New Orleans Pelicans. That's too much. It doesn't roll. When you have an animal as your mascot, it has to be tough, man. Even the Dolphins, Miami Dolphins. Dolphins aren't tough. Why aren't they the Miami Sharks? Like, I don't get that either, but I don't know, man. I digress. We spend a lot of time on the Pelicans because I guess we're just, like, in awe of how
because when I first heard it, I thought it was a joke, but I see how serious he is, and I'm like, no. I can't imagine cutting on, like, you know what I'm saying, any sports show, and it's like, yeah, the Pelicans are coming into town. Dumb as hell.
Like, I'm not scared. The Cleveland Cavaliers rookies are being hazed by being forced to carry around baby dolls, pink diaper bags, and strollers. So I'm assuming that these guys have to, and their rookies are Deion Waiters, Tyler Zeller, and Kevin Jones. The coach is in on this, Byron Scott. I think he actually gave them the baby dolls. I think they all have female baby dolls. And Kevin Jones said apparently you got to carry milk and Pampers in the little pink diaper bag. And you got to make sure it's always full with that stuff and bring it in and out of the arena with you, and you'll get in trouble if you don't have it with you. What do you think about this hazing ritual?
I think it's also dumb as hell. When I would hear about a lot of the older guys who would do hazing in the NFL and such, they would talk about, like, different things they were required to do to help them build trust and camaraderie. Now it just sounds like you're just trying to clown the hell out of them. Like,
yeah, carrying bags.
I mean, you know.
Getting the donuts, stuff like that. But pink bags and strollers and carrying baby dolls and stuff like that. To me,
I guess it needs something to Go ahead.
To me, it sounds like Byron Scott, you know, is being a little homophobic. Because what is he trying to label these fellas as, making them carry pink bags and baby dolls
yeah,
and
I
stuff
mean,
like that?
It's honestly, it's ridiculous.
Shout out to
OutSports. Only thing I can say is this, man. Like, yo, Cleveland is so a horrible place to live and even to visit that I guess you need something exciting to do in Cleveland. You know, and shout out to our listeners from Cleveland because we do have some, but yeah, your city is horrible. So with that being said, they need something to keep them entertained so they get entertained by their rookies, man. You know, just ridiculous. Though. I don't see the point.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they didn't make LeBron do that when he was there. But
yeah,
He probably made 10-year veterans carry around his real kids,
mm-hmm.
change their diapers. But anyway, last thing, while you were on the grind this week, a picture was leaked and actually went viral of the Spurs, Tim Duncan and Tony Parker at a Halloween party holding guns to the head of a person who was dressed as NBA official Joey Crawford. What did you think about that when you saw that? Because you know they, you know, especially Tim Duncan has had beef with Joey Crawford in the past. Joey Crawford even threw him out of a game that he wasn't even in. He was on the bench.
Yeah.
He got
that
ejected from the game.
He got ejected from sitting on the bench. And, you know, knowing the history and the beef, I found this very hilarious. And I think it was Jeremy Quinn on our Facebook page, facebook.com/worldofsports, who made a point, and I agree with him because I was thinking the same thing right before he wrote it, which is everything going on with the Spurs kind of like makes you root for them or, you know, it makes them attractive as a team in the sense that before they were considered a boring team nobody liked. But they're showing a little personality now, whether it's the coach trying to stick it to the league or these guys in the future. You know, so it gives the team
yeah.
a little personality, and everybody likes personality with the team.
When I saw it, I was like, I hope that the league doesn't take it too serious. The only reason that I could see them doing that, and it might be a little justified, is just because there were guns involved. I mean, I'm pretty sure they weren't real guns, but that's not the image that the league wants to portray. But so far, I haven't heard anything, you know, come from David Stern on the situation. So I think because of everything they're going through now with the whole $250,000 fine for resting players, I don't even think he's going to have time to even get to that. I think, you know, it's going to be a situation where, okay, this is enough already with the Spurs. We didn't already hit them hard. There's no reason to address this. Maybe they just send them a little memo like, okay, with the guns, but, you know, not necessarily because
yeah.
it was with the ref, but just the image with the guns. That's the only thing I would be able to understand, but like I said, I hope they don't take it too seriously because it was really funny, you know what I mean?
Shout out to my man Gilbert Arenas, by the way.
yeah, now if it was him in the picture, it might have to be something because, you know, him and Crittenden, they got a history. Guns and doo-doo in the shoes. But,
I thought it was funny. Like I said, it gave the team a little personality, you know, considering it is the Spurs and how boring they are as a franchise. Very effective yet boring. So that's how I felt when I saw the picture, and I just hope that they didn't, you know, take it that personal. But the Joey Crawford thing made it extra hilarious.
It was. All right, but that's what happened, everybody, while y'all were on the grind. All right, y'all know the drill, but I'm going to give you the drill anyway. Check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send us a message about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the Memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise and click the Blog tab to read our latest articles in the All's Fair in Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, to download free War Room Sports mobile apps on your Android or Apple devices, and a host of other things. Watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, if you're kind of lazy, you can sign in through your Facebook or your Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows, and that'll get you updates and reminders about the show weekly. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak to Jimmy and I tonight, Dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand, so raise your hand, and we just might call on you. And we are 30 minutes into the show, so that Digital Extreme Technologies hotline is now open. You can call in and talk to us about, like we just said, any of the topics that we've talked about or anything that we are about to talk about. And we are about to talk about some hot topics. Hot topics are brought to you by Audible. Is your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? Well, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you got to do is visit Audible and sign up for a free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to some of the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the same time. And if you don't want to, you know, get a trial at Audible, you know, just have your lady read to you if you got it like that. Jim.
Yes, sir.
Saturday, Heisman finalists. It's going to be announced. Well, I'm not the finalist, but, you know, the actual winner is going to be announced. Our five finalists this year is, of course, linebacker Manti Te'o from Notre Dame, QB Johnny Manziel, a.k.a. Johnny Football from Texas A&M, QB Braxton Miller from Ohio State, QB Colin Klein from Kansas State, and wide receiver Marquise Lee from USC. Interesting field this year. In my opinion, it's not exactly one of the more star-studded fields that we're used to. But with that being said and taking all that into consideration, who do you see as the favorite for the Heisman Trophy this week?
I see the favorite as being Johnny Football. I think he's in the process of building up his brand and selling him for the next several years. I know that Adrian Peterson came in second when he was a freshman, but I think this time, you know, he got the complexion for the connection. They're going to give him the Heisman and build up. They're going to build up his brand over the next couple of years and sell out college football. It's not him, you know. Te'o could be the only other one I would see getting it. But again, for some reason, when it comes to the Heisman Trophy or MVP in the NFL, they disrespect defensive players and don't allow them to win these awards, which is ridiculous in my personal opinion. So I see Johnny Football. Optimus Klein had a great season, but I think that loss they had a couple weeks ago kind of hurt him because they were in the process of making a run to the national championship, and, you know, they got their hindies kicked. So
right.
They're going to give it to Johnny Football.
Yeah, much like you, I think that at this point that Johnny Football and Te'o are the front runners. But like you said, the Heisman is not something that they normally give to defensive players. As a matter of fact, there's no full-time defensive player who's ever won the award. Now, we all know that Chuck Woodson won it back in his day, but, you know, he returned kicks. He played a little bit of offense whenever he could. So, you know, that counts as not being a full-time defensive player. And the fact that Te'o is, I find it hard for them, you know, I find it hard to believe that they'll give it to him. But a little bit of perspective in numbers, because we know a lot of people that listen to us are all into numbers, Johnny Football finished the regular season with 3,419 pass yards and 1,181 rushing yards. Yo, so he had 4,600 yards of total offense. He broke a SEC single-season record set by Cam Newton, the 2010 Heisman Trophy winner. Before that, the record was Tim Tebow, the 2007 Heisman Trophy winner. Manziel, he's responsible for 43 touchdowns this season. He has six games with at least two touchdowns passing and rushing. That's tied with Tebow for the most games in that category. And Optimus Klein, Colin Klein is tied for second in college football this season with three games like that. He had 784 rushing yards off scrambles. So the rest of those rushing yards were actually called plays. So, yeah, this dude, you know, he was a dual threat. It kind of looks like you said, it's definitely going to go to him. Te'o has seven interceptions this season, tied for second most in college football Division I college football. And, of course, that's more than any other linebacker. He has 2 fumble recoveries to total 9 total takeaways. He has 103 tackles, 42 more tackles than any other player on his team, Notre Dame. And, of course, Notre Dame leads the nation in scoring defense at 10.3 points per game. And they're the only team that hasn't given up a touchdown drive longer than 75 yards this season. And he's the catalyst and the leader of that defense. So I guess pretty much we're agreeing. Those are our top 2 candidates. But I think we're both in agreement that they're going to give it to Johnny Football.
Yeah. You know, unless they're trying to, like, you know, set a new trend now, make news by giving it to a defensive player. They're sitting there playing in the national championship. But I just think Johnny Football, he's going to be pushed down our throats, Paul, for the next several years, starting with this Heisman Trophy.
Yeah. Well, and in Tao's, I guess in his corner, also what he has is his story. You know, he's played
mm-hmm.
through some adversity this year.
Mm-hmm.
Was it his grandmother he lost? His grandmother and his girlfriend, basically, at the same time. He lost them, played through it. You know, a lot of people from other teams, when they went to play people, you know, were kind of giving him love as they went through their season. But, you know, he has a good story of adversity.
Yeah, and they
you
always
know, the
like
sports world. They love those stories of adversity, man.
Yeah,
so.
And shout out to the homie Kevin Lang, who's listening in, just hit me on Twitter. He said if Johnny Football would win, he'd be under extreme pressure to win the Heisman twice, considering he has a couple more years. He has to play college football. You know, and that's a great point that Kevin makes.
Yeah, that is a good point, but I'm like, if you got it already, like, how much pressure?
I'm about to say, it could be looked at 2 ways, because, you know, it's sort of like when guys win a championship as an NFL quarterback, they say, okay, well, now he's under pressure to win more.
Right.
And sometimes it's not. It's like, okay, he already has one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it could work one of 2 ways.
As far as pressure goes, I think being a freshman and winning the Heisman as a quarterback, I think it will put more pressure on you 2 and 3 years down the line to be a great NFL quarterback more than it will put pressure on you to actually win the Heisman again. Because they're going to say, you know, it's going to be an unprecedented thing, and they're going to be like, man, he won the Heisman as a freshman. He has to be a can't-miss prospect and this and that, you know, in the NFL.
And shout out to Kevin, but I looked at it this way. If he doesn't win, let's say he comes second in the voting, I think it's more pressure than even winning. You know what I mean? Now it's like, okay, you came in second.
Yeah.
You got to have a better season than you did last season.
Exactly.
You set the bar so high. I mean, you rolled off some of his stats, and they're astounding. But you're setting the bar so high as a freshman. Where do you go in the next, like, 2 years, at least 2 years? You know, he's going to have to compete for a national championship, for one, considering the season they had. And they beat, you know, a team that's playing in the national championship. So the pressure is going to be extremely high on him anyway. I mean, he's already got a name, Johnny Football. He's all over the place, and he will be pushed down our throat. So it's like he has pressure anyway. Any way you look at it, the pressure's on him.
Either way. But, yeah, I do agree with you, though. I think more so if he comes in a close second as a freshman quarterback, you know, they're going to look at it like, well, man, you have 2 or 3 more years to do this.
Yeah.
If you don't,
yeah,
you know, it's going to look like you regressed. You know, they're not going to look at it as like, okay, some better football players, some better quarterbacks came into college football. They're going to look at it as regression no matter what he does. So,
yeah.
I think out of all the pressure situations, I think the least amount of pressure would be if he just went ahead and won right now. Then he could just go off and be a bust and, you know, get it over with. All right, so the winter meetings in baseball, you know, have been going on the past few days. And as usual, right around this time, you know, the hot stove is blazing. There's been a lot of signings. There's been some trades. Some of the more notable names, Joe Blanton, he's only notable because we're all from Philadelphia. We're Philly fans. He was on that 2008 World Series team. So if anybody else is out there like, what the hell is Joe Blanton notable for? But Joe Blanton signed a 2-year deal with the Angels. Sean Burnett signed a 2-year deal with the Angels. Jason Bay signed a 1-year deal with Seattle. Eric Chavez, 1-year deal with Arizona. Yunel Escobar, he was traded to Tampa Bay. You know, that happened a while ago. Shane Victorino, another former Philly, Then last year was with the Dodgers. He signed a 3-year deal with the Boston Red Sox. Who else? James Loney, he's first baseman. He signed a 1-year deal with the Tampa Bay Rays. Some more notable names out there, but, you know, the big names have yet to be signed. You know, they're waiting on Josh Hamilton in Texas to see what he's going to do, if he's going to re-sign with the team, excuse me, or if he's going to go elsewhere. The Phillies have actually made a trade with the Rangers in principle to grab third baseman Michael Young, but they're waiting on Michael Young because I think he has a no-trade clause, or not a no-trade clause. He has like a – I think it's his choice. He has to agree to be traded to the Phillies. So I don't know if that's a no-trade clause or is that some kind of trade exception. Or, either way, it's his decision. What do you think he would do in a situation like that? I mean, the Rangers have been in the last couple World Series. To leave that place would be to basically think that your window is closing. You think he would do that?
Great question. That would mean that would be his only reason for staying or leaving. And as we know, when you talk about athletes, winning sometimes is not the most important thing and is always not the only thing. You know, as much as we'd like to, as fans, believe that winning is, you know, the best thing possible, you know, I don't know. At the end of the day, they haven't really won anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy situation for him. Do you come to a team who's been successful over the past few seasons and then kind of choked it up this year? Like, because you may look at them as their window being closed. So it's like, you know, why would I go from here to a team whose window just seemed like, you know, it shut all of a sudden last year when they were picked by many to still win that division, and, you know, they just didn't even make the playoffs.
That's where all those other factors come in. What does wifey think?
Just like Cliff Lee, you know, his wife, he had a big part in him coming back to Philly.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. Like, what does wifey think on where schools? Where can I get the best Molly from? Because, you know, no, Mom.
Yo, speaking of, Cliff Lee's name is back in trade rumors. And you know how I feel about that. I would hate to see him leave again, man. And the Phillies just traded Vance Worley, another pitcher that I liked. You know, he was a young guy. I was, you know, growing to like Vance Worley, and they got rid of him and another pitching prospect, Trevor May, sent him to Minnesota for outfielder Ben Revere, who they're basically hoping could be a younger version of Michael Bourne. And they're saying, you know, he's already penciled in to be the Phillies' opening day center fielder. So we'll see how that works out. But, you know, the hot stove is still heated even after the conclusion of the winter meeting. So, you know, we'll keep track of these, the wheeling and dealing, in the next week or so and update you guys again next week. Big story of the week. Well, no, before we get to that, we talked about this earlier in the week because we actually did a video about it. We did an HOF or FOH video version on our War Room Sports TV on our YouTube channel. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Sammy Sosa are all eligible for the Hall of Fame. The voting will be taking place all throughout this month, and whoever gets in will be announced, I believe it's on January 9th. For the people who didn't see that, Jimmy, what's your opinion on these three guys and their quest to get into the Hall of Fame? And we know that the whole steroid issue looms over their heads. What's your opinion on these guys and whether they should or shouldn't get into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, first thing, I want to implore people to go to worldsportstv.com and watch the video because I did an excellent job in that video. So I wanted you guys to see me doing an excellent job. With that being said, I think that you should definitely let them in. And that's my personal opinion. Barry Bonds is probably the single greatest baseball player I've ever seen in my lifetime. And, you know, just like I said in the video, things in my lifetime, I want them all celebrated. I think he should be put in the Hall of Fame. Even before the so-called steroid suspicion, he was already the best player in baseball. And it's like you can't just erase what happened on that decade and act like it didn't happen. So it's like, are you going to eliminate everybody from contention for the Hall of Fame during that period, which they called, they deemed the steroid era? You know,
right.
you can't do it. You have to let them in. I mean, we don't know what. First off, okay, who are they hurting by taking the steroids? Because I can get into a big conversation about this, because honestly, I can care less if they did take steroids. how many guys are in the Hall of Fame now who are wife beaters, you know, tax evaders, and all kinds of other, you know, things that they have done in their lifetime, but they're still eligible to be in the Hall of Fame. So,
well, playing devil's advocate, when you go to cats like that, people are probably going to rebut by saying, you know, what they did actually affected the sport. So, you know, you can have wife beaters and child molesters and all that. If it didn't affect the sport, then, you know, the Hall of Fame looks at it differently.
But hold on, though. What they did didn't affect the sport, because what they were doing, it wasn't illegal at the time. They're trying to keep the model on a moral ground, as not opposed to doing anything illegal. And none of these guys got caught while it happened. I mean, you know, they've been caught after the fact. But at the end of the day, this is not why they're trying to hold them out.
No, and you're exactly right. The substances that they were accused of taking, you're right, at that time they weren't on the ban list. But you talked about this before. I remember you even wrote a blog about it. These unwritten rules of baseball. And what I think, if you have a rule, then write it down, you know, because you just expect everybody to live by a letter of the law that doesn't exist. It's a type of thing where whoever took steroids, of course they did it in secret because they knew that they were cheating, but at the same time, if something's not on the ban list, then, you know, you basically have an alibi when you're doing it. The problem, like you just said, with every guy who's been under suspicion of taking steroids is the fact that they lied about it, and then they even got in front of grand juries and lied about it. So it turns it into a legal case rather than just a cheating in baseball case. And that's how they tried
to
get
man,
these guys.
Shout out to my man Sammy Sosa, who all of a sudden, when he got called in front of the grand jury, my man forgot how to speak English. He had to bring a translator in. The whole time he was chasing a home run record, he spoke perfect English, but...
And then he
turned into a white man and forgot how to speak English. He got some more comments on Twitter. Leroy McConnell weighs in about two things. He says if Mike Young has an everyday position, then he is gone. He doesn't like being a utility player, so that's his comment in reference to Mike Young.
He's right down there at the, you know, at the pulse of the whole thing because he's down there in Dallas. So if that's the case and he's right about that, then he probably is gone because the Phillies have already said you'll be our everyday third baseman because they're looking, you know, to re-up at third base right now. Well, what
Absolutely.
Else
he also weighs in and says that Bonds and Clemens should be in. So I take it he thinks that Sosa shouldn't, but, you know.
See, so now I'm going to tell you why, because when we talk about this, that's the sentiment. Like, people are – skeptical about Sosa is not just because of the whole steroid thing. It's just as a player, he doesn't measure up to a Bonds or a Clemens. Let me read some of the numbers here. Bonds, of course, is a seven-time MVP. He has 762 home runs. Clemens, a seven-time Cy Young Award winner, 354 wins, 4,672 strikeouts.
Now, Sosa
registers well on the home run list with 609, but other than that, what the hell did Sammy Sosa do? Like, you know, he's not on this list of winning a bunch of MVPs or anything like that. So I think that's why some people are a little skeptical about Sammy Sosa.
I mean, yeah, but it used to be once you hit 500 home runs, you were in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
See, but that's the difference now. The number has to be even more astronomical than that, because they're playing in the quote-unquote steroid era.
Yeah, so, I kind of disagree with that, man. I mean, that's...
Yeah, 609 doesn't impress people anymore.
Come on, how could 609... Yo, come on, man. He got more than Michael Jack Schmidt. And then, like, Michael Jack Schmidt was an outstanding fielder.
And to the credit of these hitters, I mean, it's widely rumored that there were more pitchers on the juice than anything. So,
and that's exactly my point. And that's another point, another great point. It all equals itself out. I mean, the numbers look astounding, but look at the pitchers who were recovering from pitching and came right back. You know what I'm saying? So, it's ridiculous.
My thing is this. I'm not condoning any form of cheating in any sport, or at least not getting caught. with this whole situation, I pretty much think that they should be in as well. At the very least, Clemens and Bonds, because they're no-brainers. But even in Sosa's case, 609 home runs is basically nothing to sneeze at. I think they should be in simply because of the fact that there's no certainty in this whole steroid thing. Like, there's so many people who were under suspicion. You don't know how many people were. Like, half the league or even more could have been juicing, which kind of evens the playing field anyway. But since you don't know these things, I don't think you can just hold people accountable by not allowing them into the pantheon of, you know, of baseball lore just because you have a suspicion. And, you know, both of these guys went to court. Clemens actually got off. Bonds really didn't get off. But, you know, they went easy on him as far as sentencing was concerned. But he didn't actually get off like Clemens. So Clemens wasn't – he was proven – innocent in a court of law. So as a sports writer, and we talked about this earlier, how their personal feelings go into this just as much as anything, like what do you do after he's gone through all of that and
doesn't even matter.
In our justice
it's
system.
Like, it's like that case honestly was irrelevant.
Because their minds are basically made up anyway, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's like when people are accused, like if it came out today that Sandusky didn't do anything that he was accused of, it wouldn't even matter. Certain things, like, it's the accusations, it doesn't even matter. It's like perception becomes reality. So,
all right, well, so the last thing, 112 of the voters were surveyed recently, and out of that 112, 45% supported Bonds getting in, 43% supported Clemens getting in, and only 18% supported Sammy Sosa getting in. So it sounds like Sammy Sosa is going to have the hardest time getting into the Hall of Fame because I think even, like we talked about, even if all three of these guys get the benefit of the doubt, Sammy is still going to be looked at as, you know, whether or not his career was even worthy. So
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see. So I'm kind of waiting for, you know, January 9th for them to make this announcement so we can see what goes on.
I mean, Sosa is a white man now, so he might have a better shot.
There's probably the biggest sports story of the past week, of course, was a tragic story. It happened in Kansas City. Javon Belcher, linebacker, former linebacker for the Kansas City Chiefs, murdered his girlfriend, the mother of his 3-month-old daughter, and then drove to the Kansas City Chiefs facilities at Arrowhead Stadium and committed suicide in the parking lot in front of his head coach, Romeo Crennel, and the team's general manager. This is another story that we did an episode on our YouTube channel, so make sure you go check that out. But, of course, you know, we got to talk about it on the big show. Jimmy, what was your take on this whole situation? What were your thoughts on this murder-suicide by Javon Belcher?
When I first heard it, I immediately went to, wow, what a coward. But I thought about it because it's like mental illness is something that affects the African-American community, but nobody wants to talk about. People don't go seek help even though they need it. I mean, I'll probably need help myself, and I haven't seeked it out. But anyway, that being said, it's one of those things that, you know, it's just sad. I don't know what he was going through. So, I mean, I don't know what can make you take the life of not only your woman but the mother of your children. But it had to be something. So I didn't want to be too judgmental because I know B. Austin like felt some type of way about this, you know, called him a coward and such. And I get where he came from and I get the emotion behind that. But the more I think about it, I just think that it's a bigger issue here. And it's just an overall sad situation because, I mean, I watch the news every night. This stuff happens all the time, believe it or not. I mean, domestic violence, people shooting their women and stabbing their men. This kind of stuff happens all the time. It just so happens that he's a football player, so, you know, it shed light on the situation. But This is a reality of the world we live in.
Yeah, it definitely is a reality of the world we live in, just like you said. And there could be underlying mental health factors involved in all of this, but just looking at it from the surface perspective, and, you know, just like you said, like you and like much like B. Austin, maybe not on the level of anger that B. Austin had about the situation, I also thought that he kind of took the coward way out. Not necessarily, like, because I don't, you know, we don't know the situation. We hear rumors, we hear speculation of what went down and why it went down the way it did. But, you know, I don't know if he was already in a mind state of suicide prior to murdering his girlfriend, or if the suicide was, you know, a direct result of shooting her and not wanting to deal with the consequences of what he had just done. It's just a sad story because you leave a three-month-old baby orphaned. Right now, his mother has temporary custody of their daughter. Speaking of his mother, that situation is terrible because she was in town visiting, and she actually witnessed her son shoot and kill his girlfriend. More details about that are coming out. They were talking about the 911 call where she was actually trying to keep the girl alive while she called 911 to come help. She was unsuccessful, of course. It's just crazy for a mother to have to watch her son go down that path that quickly. And
yeah,
then
now, you know,
the fact that he goes to
done.
The facility and he basically makes his head coach, after thanking them, he makes his head coach and GM watch him do this. So it's like he creates a lot of trauma for a lot of lives. You know what I'm saying? You commit suicide in front of somebody.
You could have just murked yourself on the highway. Why would you go? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, sort of like it was a cry for attention, but he couldn't deal with what he just did, because I heard stories of after he shot her, like he kneeled down and kissed her. Like he couldn't deal with what he just did. And that's the thing about it in life. And I hate to sound like I'm on my soapbox now. You make a lot of decisions without thinking that affect you for the rest of your life,
right?
And you have to deal with them, and he wasn't able to deal with it. John brought up a point in our chat room. Shout out to John. He says, people don't realize how pervasive mental health disorders are and how rampant, but at the same time so largely ignored until it's too late, unfortunately. And that's absolutely true. I knew a guy who I grew up with committed suicide, and you know, we were younger, and to this day, no one really knows what was going on. You know, we believe it was over some yams, but at the end of the day, it was like he just didn't feel as though he had anybody to talk to with whatever he was going with his lady. But in our community, it's one of them things where after that happened, it just wasn't talked about. It's like, okay, he's gone.
Exactly.
No one talked
about
why.
That's kind of the problem, because you would find it hard to believe anybody, you know, let alone, you know, a young person would be having problems in their life serious enough for them to take their own lives. But like you said, it's when you're talking about mental health, you know, if nobody talks about it, people around these people really don't know how serious this stuff really is, because all you can do is sit around and say, I can never imagine taking my own life, or I don't know, you know, I can never imagine him taking his own life. But
this
it's real.
Crazy. This is why I'm not one of these guys who like has road rage. Like, I don't cuss at people in the street, because I mean, you never know what's going on in somebody's life or in somebody's head.
Right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying? Like, I know people that have literally lost their life because they argued with somebody in a car and that person got out and shot them and everybody around them. So it's like,
right.
you never know what's going on in someone's world. And, you know, like I said, it's just one of those situations. It's definitely sad, but it's a lot bigger than this NFL player. This happens all the time. John, with another point, says nobody wants to come across as being judgmental. That's why it's hush in our neighborhoods. He's absolutely right.
He makes a great point there. All right, so before we move on and talk a little bit of NBA hoops, you know, I just want to give a shout-out to the people in our War Room Sports Gridiron Gentlemen's Club Fantasy Football League. The playoffs start. They actually start tonight since there's a Thursday night game. So, Jimmy, you're a part of the mix, the playoff mix.
Know.
So don't forget to change your team, because there is a game tonight. But if you guys haven't heard us talk about this league, the league is fun, but you know, when we announce it in the beginning of the season, you got to hurry. It's first come, first serve. We only did, 14 teams this year? First prize, $500. Yeah, I know. Bring that back down to 12. Two people are going to be short. Because there's so many people fighting for that. So, yeah, the playoffs start, you know, so in 2 weeks we will have a champion crowned, you know, and they'll get their name etched on the Gil Memorial. The Gil West Memorial Trophy. They'll get that $500 first prize. So, you know, may the best team win. I can't say may the best man win because we do have a female in the mix. And I'm a little salty because I had a three-way tie for my division, and guess who they put in third place? And I held the lead, the division lead, for most of the season. So anyway,
that's
just wanted
you had
to get
Aaron Rodgers, man.
I know, but he was slacking off lately, man.
Exactly. That's what happens when your team is built around that one dude. Just Kevin Belichick's gonna come through and
it's
trouble.
It's the playoffs for the next three games. I need Aaron Rodgers to go crazy. I need him to be a one man gang out there. Discount quadruple checks as far as touchdowns go. All right. So yeah. Just shout out to the league, to everybody who participated, even the people who didn't make the playoffs. We hope to see you back next year. We'll announce the champion in about 2 weeks, and maybe we'll have him on to say a few words. Hopefully that'll be me, and then we won't have to have anybody on. But, Jim, what you want to talk about some NBA, some hoops?
You already know this is my favorite part of the whole show, man. It's the NBA rap. And for those who don't know, the NBA rap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, your Android phone, your BlackBerry, your Palm phone. But as we always say, if you still have a BlackBerry or Palm phone, report to your roof and jump off. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed or no memory or storage wasted. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com/The War Room, one word. And when asked for a coupon code, put in The War Room. Again, one word. I will enter you into a contest to win millions and millions of money. And with that being said, let's right into these basketball topics. Yes, sir. And shout out to everybody checking in. We got people hit me up on Facebook and Twitter. And I even got somebody that's hit me up on GroupMe. That's right. I'm all over the place in terms of the social media. Shout out to Glenn and Willie and GroupMe hitting me up. Everybody wants to talk about Kobe. And guess what? We'll get there in a minute.
Yep.
NBA Players of the Week, first of all. Let's talk about Carmelo Anthony and Kevin Durant. Those are the Players of the Week. Dev, what does that look like?
All right. Carmelo Anthony helped the Knicks to a 3-1 mark during the week. He averaged the league-best 29.5 points, 8 rebounds, and 1.3 blocks. Kevin Durant guided the Thunder to a 4-0 week. He averaged 25 points, 6.3 rebounds, and 2.5 blocks per game. He also shot 60%, almost 61% from the field, 46% from three-point, and 89, almost 90% from the free throw line. And he had a season high 37 points in their win against Houston against his former teammate, James Harden. So that's how the NBA looked this week. Those are the two cats that dominated the league this week. This NBA Player of the Week thing, man, when they're being honest and they're not trying to just give it to some certain cats so they can stop giving it to the same dudes, it's the same few people winning. Just, you know.
Yeah. LeBron. I mean, it's like they try their best to, like, go outside the box, but it's like four dudes that win the Player of the Week.
It's going to be LeBron, Durant, Kobe, Melo. The only reason Kobe hasn't won a little more is because the Lakers don't have 3-1 and 4-0 weeks this year.
Man, you ain't never lie. They stink like trash truck juice. But it's sort of like, we always talk about, like, when we talk to athletes and we'll ask them, who's the hardest cover in the league? And they'll always say, Melo, LeBron, Kobe. And we'd be like, man, you know that already.
Yeah, but the people we expect.
It's the reason why these dudes are these dudes. You know what I'm saying? Which is why they will continue to win these Players of the Week. LaVoy McConnell just said he'll be at the Thunder Lakers game tomorrow. Shout out to him. you know, I'm kind of jealous, so, you know, just keep it funky. yeah, but man,
I got
look,
the Thunder winning that one, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's easy, man. Kevin Durant, man, is playing out of his mind, and, you know, when I see him play, I get thinking my man Sonny Hill.
No wow. human being can do that.
Because Durant be in his bag. Anyway, let's talk about the players of the month. You said LeBron and Durant. Of course, players of the week, Melo and Durant. Players of the month, LeBron and Durant. You know, those are what we said. But another award came out, though.
Well, hold on. Let me tell you the.
You want to get their monthly
stats? Yeah, I'll give you the stats of LeBron and Kevin Durant for the month. LeBron, he was second in the league in scoring at 25 per game. Fifth in field goal percentage at 53%. And the Heat went on an 11-3 start during October and November. He also averaged 8.9 rebounds and 6.5 assists. Durant averaged 26.5 points per game during the month. And the Thunder started out 13-4. He shot 43% from the three-point line and 89% from the free throw line. And he averaged 8.8 rebounds and 1.6 blocks. So it's like
no
Durant out there.
He can do that.
Durant out there blocking shots these days. I guess he, you know,
yo, he's all
tall.
Over the place.
Yeah. Crazy.
I mean, damn.
All right, so what else? It's a lot of awards being given out this week.
This other award was a great award. The SI Sportsman of the Year was given to one LeBron Ramon James.
That's
a hell of a year.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think that's well-deserved. LeBron had a great year, kind of a year of redemption, you know, because he had to go through everything he went through last year after making that move to Miami. Having the whole world want you to fail, and you went and obliged them, and you failed, came back with a nice year, you know, NBA MVP, NBA championship, Olympic gold medal, you know, and just all the things that he can do and did do on a basketball court, he did them. So, you know, I don't have a problem with that. Like a few more people said, like, you know, if there was somebody who could have won it, it may have been somebody like a Usain Bolt for the year he had in track and field, capping it off with, you know, a great showing in the Olympics. But I don't think they could go wrong naming LeBron the Sportsman of the Year.
Plus, Usain's not going to sell as many copies as one LeBron Ramon James.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that's a fact of the matter. But, you know, I think it definitely was deserved. LeBron is the best basketball player in the universe, you know, and I say that as a Lakers fan. Because people be like, well, listen, man, LeBron James is the best basketball player.
The torch had to be passed one day, and, you know, LeBron wasn't going to be denied for much longer. Like, in my case, it wasn't even a case of him winning the championship because I had already moved him into that top spot before they won the championship. I moved him there even after what went down in the finals the year before against the Mavericks. He didn't get the championship. He kind of came up short in a certain situation, but you still couldn't deny him and what he could do on a basketball court as being the best player in the league. Okay, you know, he may not ever, you know, I would say still and may not ever be, you know, the fourth quarter or clutch time killer that a Kobe Bryant is, or maybe not even a Kevin Durant. But at the same time, you know, the dude, you just can't deny what he does on the basketball court. So
yeah, you definitely can't. And that whole fourth quarter thing, man, you know, he may not. But then again, I don't know how great of a fourth quarter player Dr. J was. I don't know how great of a fourth quarter player George Gervin was. I tell you, man, it's that whole Michael Jordan thing. Everybody has to be, you know, just the so-called superhero in the fourth quarter when it didn't used to be that way. So
everything Michael Jordan did in his career has set a new bar for every player to come after him. And it's kind of unfair.
Irritating at this point,
like you
Joe.
Said, like the whole clutch fourth quarter thing. Of course, we've had clutch players in the league before, but even their names didn't come up in this conversation until after Michael Jordan did what he did. You have the whole everybody's career is judged on championships now. That's another thing with Michael Jordan. Bill Russell and a lot of those Celtics players won 11 championships way before Michael Jordan even came along, but you never really heard about that until Michael Jordan came and won 6 championships. So, yeah, he's kind of set the bar for everybody to come behind him, and I think that bar sometimes is a little unfair because I really don't think that it's impossible for you to be an NBA great if you didn't win a championship or if you only won one championship or if you only won 2 championships. It's definitely
kind of crazy, man. It's kind of crazy. You know,
the MJ effect.
The MJ effect, and just like John just said in the chat room, it's partially David Stern is to blame because with him and the whole marketing thing with MJ, that was part of it. But it's just kind of irritating. Like even with Kobe's accomplishments, every time I look up on TV, Kobe versus Jordan, like yo, just stop already. Like you know, both guys are great. I understand with sports, this is what we do. We compare and contrast players and eras and generations. But sometimes it gets to be annoying. When it's the same guys over and over again because the arguments just become repetitive. At any rate, let's talk about some other hoops. Speaking of what I just said, Kobe Bryant becomes the youngest player to 30K point club. When this happened, I mean, you know, of course everybody knows I live on Twitter, at JW Blueprint, and also at War Room Sports. But anyway, I saw some of the love and admiration for Kobe. But just any time Kobe
but
comes
then,
up, you know, the haters about to say, come out.
But then you saw what? The venom.
Oh, my God.
The vitriol.
Playing.
Yeah,
oh,
it's
God,
crazy at
crazy.
This point. Well, let's real quick, because we got one of our co-hosts, we got B. Austin, checking in from wherever he is right now. So let's get him on the line real quick and get his opinion about the Kobe thing, and you know, and then we'll wrap the Kobe thing and move on in the show. B. Austin, what's going on, brother? Okay.
What happened?
Austin, we can't hear you. So,
yeah.
Get that situation straightened out. All right, so
that's what happens. B. Austin just popped a molly. He's sweating. But anyway, listen, with that being said, back to Kobe. I saw some of the slander I saw was out of control. Like, you know, he has smushed Parker, I think, because if not for him, he wouldn't have took all them shots. You know, people talked about his lifetime statistics. It took him longer in terms of game-wise to do it than anybody else.
What does any of this matter? I seriously don't get it. I don't get when it comes to Kobe Bryant. I don't get, you know, after 16 years, 5 NBA titles, you know, he's joined the 30,000-point club. It doesn't matter how many games you take to get there. It's first of all, it's very rare that people play a sport long enough, you know, to, you know, longevity plays a point in this, and longevity should be looked upon in a positive manner because a lot of people come and go in these leagues and don't have a chance to even get there. Even people who come in that are great scorers, they don't get into the 30,000-point club because they can't, you know, they can't play the game and stay healthy long enough to do it, or they can't stay. They can't remain at a high level long enough to do it. But back to what I was saying, like when it comes to Kobe, I don't understand after all of the accolades, after all the winning and championships and everything he's done in the league, I just don't understand the little nitpicking that a lot of people do
here's
with Kobe Bryant.
Part of it is Michael Jordan's fault again. People have this love affair with Michael Jordan. And me being a Lakers fan, I can admittedly say that Kobe Bryant has patterned his game after Jordan. He tries to walk like Jordan, chew his gum like Jordan. He pretty much patterned his life after Jordan. He's a Michael Jordan stan. And some people take offense to that.
Real quick, before you even finish that sentence, but who else, you know, who in our age bracket back in the day, you know, besides maybe you and Kill, because Kill wanted to be like, you know, crazy people that nobody wants to be like, but who wasn't a Michael Jordan stan back there?
No, I get that. But I
think people are upset
people
because he was able to do it successfully.
No, that's part of it. And also part of it is like, you know, it's like he's just trying to be like Mike, so to speak. Even though everybody was, he was the best at it. I mean, because there's a lot of guys who try to pattern their game after Mike. He was the best at it, and people don't take too kindly to that. And also the fact of the matter is he plays for one of the most hated teams in sports, also one of the most loved. You know,
the most hated is always one of the most loved. It goes both ways with Yankees,
exactly.
Cowboys,
so,
Lakers, you know.
So, I mean, that's part of it. It's a lot of factors that play into it, Kobe's attitude. But his attitude is also part of the reason why he is great. But at the same time, it's not endearing to fans if you don't like that team.
Speaking of attitude, how many discussions have you been in over the years where somebody says that they didn't like Kobe because he was arrogant, but at the same time, they're Michael Jordan fanatics? I've never seen an athlete more arrogant than Michael Jordan. But
this is true, but this also
I'm a different breed. That doesn't bother me, because if you're as good as these guys, you have
Listen,
a right
man.
To be arrogant.
I'm going to be perfectly blunt. I think that most great players are assholes, because I think you have to be. Because you have to be. You have to put that work in, and part of that makes you arrogant because you know that you work harder than everybody else. You know what I'm saying? And to me, I think it goes hand in hand. You know, so it's just amazing the hate that he gets, but at the same time, I understand why he gets the hate that he gets. So it's not shocking to me. At this point, I see people. Shout out to my homie Willie G again. I know he's listening. Willie G, why don't you just call in and tell us how you feel?
No, he is calling in. He is calling in right now. So we're going to get him on the line.
Right on cue.
Yeah, no, we're going to. He's been on for a second. We're going to get him right after you finish making this point.
My point is this, though. I see guys like Willie G. Willie G goes on in every argument and will defend Kobe tooth and nail. I'm at the point now where I don't even do it because I understand why people do it. It's never going to be a time where he will get the credit he deserves. Because this is also the time in society we live in. Michael Jordan wasn't around when there was a Facebook or Twitter for people to express themselves. And a lot of times when guys retire and go away, when we look back at it, we show, like, admiration. But I'm pretty sure while Mike was playing, he had a lot of people that hated him.
And that's going to be a thing with a lot of Kobe detractors. Like, they're going to miss him when he's gone. Like, come on.
But
like,
that's it. Exactly.
My point is, you've come to a point of understanding. I haven't really come to a point of understanding because, you know, just like you, I'm a basketball purist. And a lot of these people who dislike Kobe claim to be that as well. If that's the case, then come on. If you're a basketball purist, how is he not entertaining to you? I'm not a Lakers fan. So, you know, they're talking about Kobe shooting and I don't tune in to see Kobe passing the ball to anybody. I tune in to see what for him to do what he does.
And listen,
what's first and foremost in the game that Dr. Naismith invented, like putting the ball in the basket is the main point of the game. So how do you knock somebody for doing that? I don't get it, man.
Here's my thing. I'm gonna be completely 1,000 with you. I'm a Lakers fan. I've been a Lakers fan over 30 years of my life, and when people say Kobe's the greatest Laker of all time, that still rubs me the wrong way as a Lakers fan because I grew up idolizing and worshiping, I'm not even going to lie, Magic Johnson. So Magic Johnson is and always will be the greatest Laker. But with that being said,
that's one of them things. It represents your childhood. It represents the time when you became deep as a Laker fan. So, you know, sometimes
me,
that's never going to go away no matter what this cat does.
Well, I see how the Mike fans feel, you know what I mean? And he's on my team. So I can only imagine how guys who are Mike fans feel when they see somebody just basically, it's so funny, like, when you see the picture.
Different, though,
man, because
I'm definitely a Mike stan myself. But I'm like, hey, you know, other people out there good, just as good. We're gonna get that. Like, LeBron, when it's all said and done, could be better than all these guys. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. You want to bring DJ Willie G on real quick?
No,
so he can get his
no
two
doubt.
Cents off. All right, DJ Willie G.
What's good, fellas?
Happy birthday to you, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
No doubt.
No doubt,
I know,
man.
We know you got some bars on this. What's your take
you
on Kobe and the 30,000?
Now you got to stop messing with them teenage girls, man. Your birthday came up, so, you know, leave them alone.
what's your take on the 30,000 and his legacy and, you know, all that good stuff? And the detractors.
30,000, you know, it's like, say, you don't see that often. Like, we never seen, well, we seen Karl Malone do it, but, you know.
Saw Jordan do it too, buddy.
Well, who watched Jordan do it too, but at the same time, but that's an exclusive club. That's hard to do.
Saw Kareem do it too, but.
I
see what you mean. Like, these guys, the last three guys, you know, we've seen all of their baskets. We were around for all of their baskets. You know, Kareem, we kind of saw him at the end.
yeah, they've been retired for almost 20 years. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? So it's been that long since somebody did it. Now, the Kobe detractors, I think the only reason they have a problem with Kobe is like what Jim said. He's the only person to ever be like Mike because everybody wanted to be like Mike, and he did it. And they also judge Kobe with their personal feelings and not with basketball feelings. Like, you know what I'm saying? They don't watch his game. They just don't like him as a person. So they say, oh, I don't like him.
And don't know him from a can of paint. And even if he is an a-hole, which he, pretty much seems to be, like most athletes that are that talented, like why is that our concern? You know what I'm saying? I tune in to watch him play basketball. I don't really care about, what he's doing in Colorado. As a human being, it's like, okay, I may feel for the next human being who's going through something, or you may have an opinion on it in a negative way. But when it all comes down to it, when it's all said and done, you tune in for this man to entertain you while he's playing basketball. All that other stuff shouldn't really matter. But I don't know, man. Go ahead, Willie G.
It's all, like I said, it's all personal things, man. And like like Jimmy said, I don't understand how people can love Jordan so much but dislike Kobe because they're the same person.
I personally think Kobe is the same exact son.
Probably is. Even Michael Jordan's kids couldn't get his own daddy game right. So, I mean, what you're saying, they're the same exact person. So how can you not like the person that you idolized so much for so many years? Then you have the next person come in, be just like that person, and you don't like them.
But you know what, though? I honestly think, and people think, you may think I'm crazy when I say this, if Mike would have came around at a different time, the hate may have been there as well. Part of it is how the players are marketed. John in our chat room brought up a good point. The NBA has marketed Kobe next to Mike since the day he started because of how similar, the games were. So the NBA is partial to blame, like always comparing him to Mike. But when Mike played,
they already, they crown people before they earn it. But in this guy's case, he lived up to what they crowned him as. So, eventually he's going to get over
that. It's also a situation where Mike wasn't around at a time when people could just log on and slander him. Because if Mike came around, there was a Twitter when Mike played, Mike might not be looked at the way he is today.
He caught a lot of hate early in his career. All he could do was score. He can't lead a team, this and that. Mike got the same criticism. As a Kobe Bryant, that's another thing I don't understand, though. People seem to forget. People always say, yeah, Kobe this and that, and he trusts his teammates and everything. Mike went through the same thing. It may have come to a point where, because people still give Kobe that knock. Like, well, after all these years, he still doesn't get it. But I'm like, how is that even a nitpickable offense at this point after this man
NBA championships? Like Mike got criticized, but it's like on steroids, so to speak, with social media.
But even Kobe came in, when all of this started with him, this was even before the advent or the social media really blew up. That's Kobe now. Back in, the late 90s, early part of 2000s.
Or something like that? Yeah.
Since 96. So, he's been getting slander for a very long time, even when we were just emailing.
They didn't like the fact he made the All-Star team without playing.
That's undeserved, but
I always say they need to take the fans out of the All-Star vote, and that's just ludicrous.
They never stopped marketing Mike even after he was considered, he got all the hate, but they still never stopped marketing Mike. The NBA really stopped marketing Kobe when LeBron came in the league.
I wouldn't say that. I say Kobe did that. He brought that on himself with the whole Colorado situation. Not that I'm saying was guilty of what he was accused of, but that's really when his marketing stopped. That's when he stopped being the golden boy of NBA marketing. But I think, after that, I think he's made a pretty good comeback. as far as
that. That was Nike doing, not the NBA.
Yeah, not the
I mean, but Nike was partially to blame behind Mike's popularity. It was Nike too. It's the shoes. You know what I'm saying?
Nike,
but anyway, the point
Nike
of the matter
loves
is, man,
Mikey.
it's one of them things where it's his style of play. It's where he plays. It's the time he's came up. It's who he's patterned his game after. You can't pinpoint one thing to why Kobe gets the hate that he gets. There's a lot of reasons why. It's still a great accomplishment. You know, and like they're saying, although he shot 45%, you said that it's context to that. Because I know Mike shot 50%.
Yeah, see, Mike with the whole field goal percentage thing was, he was special for a shooting guard. But at the same time, Mike went to the rack more than Kobe. Kobe's, you know, he's coming to the league at a time where dudes are falling more in love with the three-point line. Those other guys, you know, of course they all shot great percentages because they were all big guys, Karl Malone, Will Chamberlain, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But,
the greatest.
You know, a lot of people talk about how Kobe Jackson, he had to take a billion shots to get 30,000, but 45%. And today's league is not terrible. It's not even bad. Like, I don't get that. You have certain cats out there shooting like 40.
Yeah, I want to ask all the questions before I dip, though.
Go ahead.
Like I put on the page today. I want y'all opinion. Do y'all think he is top five all time?
Well, before you go, give us your top five.
My top.
Flipped it on
my
you.
My top five all time, okay, no order. Top five all time is Kareem, Jordan,
mm-hmm.
Wilt,
mm-hmm.
Kobe, and Magic.
Okay. Now my top
I think that might be my top five too, in no order. My top five
is Kareem, Wilt, Magic, Kobe, and Worthy. I don't know if you can like see what I did there, but
you was that all liquor squad?
It's all liquor squad. No, but if I'm being dead serious, and this is like, you know, me trying to be totally objective, Kobe might not make my five. He might be six or seven because there's guys that I would have to put in there, like Bill Russell, but not even possibly.
Like we put Bill Russell. A lot of Russell, he goes up there because of the stat already.
Yeah, I heard a stat on Bill Russell today that said Bill Russell only had 14,000 points.
Yeah, but see, Bill Russell, that's to me which is more impressive because in order to dominate basketball games, it's not just about points. There are guys that can dominate a game without scoring. And to me, that's even more impressive than someone that can like jack up a bunch of points. Me personally,
he was a hell of a rebounder and a hell of a defender. Bill Russell played with, at the time, a lot of talent. You know, he played on a dynasty of a team. But, I still would agree with Jimmy as far as him dominating the game because, actually, besides scoring points, rebounding is the biggest way to dominate the game because you can't score points without the ball. And Bill Russell made sure the Celtics had the ball most of the game. So,
hey, Willie G, here's another stat for you. Bill Russell never lost a closeout game at any level. High school, college, or the pros. Never one time lost a closeout game. That's another thing. But the thing about it is I think that when you start talking about greatest of all time, you need to have, like, two lists because, honestly, I've never seen Russell play other than highlight films. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
yeah.
We're talking about those that I've seen play. My list changes a little bit because I have seen all the rest of those guys play. But there's guys like Larry Bird, who for some reason, when I talk to people never give Bird the credit he deserves. I watched him play.
People
was
wasn't they weren't paying attention
was
to basketball
best
back
I've
then.
Ever seen. People talk about his shooting, but he was so much more than shooting. So for me, Larry Bird would be a good
one. You know why Larry Bird don't get credit?
In the circles that we, you know, we go to different
yeah,
circles
he don't,
and talk about.
He don't have a complexion for the connection, but he was a great player.
Yeah, Larry Bird
yeah,
was a killer.
Let me ask you guys, Willie G, right before you go, let me ask you one question. In our chat room, we have John. He says, in his opinion, there can't be a greatest ever because it's a team sport. It's hard to determine the greatest ever if you're not talking about something like, you know, boxing or an individual sport. In team sports, he doesn't believe in the greatest ever. What do you think about that? Do you think he was? Huh?
I agree.
The reason why I agree with that is because,
like you said, there's too many eras of basketball to have a greatest of all time, because there's no, the basketball evolves and it all changed.
Right.
You know,
there's no real way of comparison.
Right. It's going to change.
Because it's a team sport, because the game changes, there's too many variables for somebody to be the greatest.
Right, there's too many variables. Like, okay, you got Jerry West, and back in them days, they didn't have three-pointers. You know what I'm saying? You have, the guys that came up, we was watching with Mike and all them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Of course, the game was a little bit different. You can hand check, you can clothesline somebody and not get ejected.
I guess what John, is trying to say, that you can have, like, great players, but to say that someone's the number one overall greatest. And before we go, Willie, I just want you to know that Glenn just hit me up and said that he wants you to know he heard you say that you were a Mike fan and you gave Mike credit.
Man, F Mike.
All right, DJ.
All right, Willie, thanks for calling in, homie.
All right, man, y'all be easy.
All right.
I don't know, Jim, the only thing that I disagree with a little bit in John's comment is the fact that this is one of the rare team sports where one person could have such a great impact on the game that I think you may be able to distinguish, you know, who was greater than who and who may be the greatest ever. It's different in football. You know, we give quarterbacks a lot of credit, a lot of blame. But at the same time, there's so many moving parts to a football team. So much has to go right in every play to make a play successful that you really can't give one person all the credit. Because you can have the most talent at every skill position you want, but if those hogs up front aren't giving you time to do what you're supposed to do, then it really doesn't matter and you won't look good. In basketball, one person can at times carry a team, you know. So I do think that you can have a greatest of all time.
Yeah.
What I agree with, though, is the whole thing about different eras. It's hard to compare different eras of basketball because they played the game kind of in a different way. And,
you know, it's funny
because
even with individual sports, like we talk about boxing, it's hard as well because things just change. I mean, you have guys now that, like, grew up training since the age of six. You know what I mean? And even with football, you have guys that have personal trainers as kids. If you read any history books, like baseball and football players used to have full-time jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like in the off-season, like, they were insurance salesmen and contractors. Like, they actually worked. So when you start comparing from generation to generation, there are so many variables that come into play. John brings up a point talking about, like, Dr. J and how he's regarded. And, you know, he won ABA championships, and when he came into the NBA, he wasn't even in his prime. So, you know, it's just a lot of variables when we start discussing the great. But, you know, that's the thing about sports. We love, discussing the greats. But let's move on.
I also think when we talk greatest of all time, we don't necessarily have to just be talking about the NBA because we know there was a league that was just as good. If not, the ABA was probably more talented before the merger than the NBA was. So I would include those guys in the conversation as well. But even Doc in his prime, I don't think he goes into the mix of greatest player
of all
time.
Well, see, that's the thing. When we look at Doc in his prime wasn't in the NBA. Nobody brings up
the I'm saying even in his prime in the ABA.
Yeah, but his stats in the ABA were out of this world. No one ever talks about those when talking about him and his legacy. They only bring up the Sixers years. Like, when you talk about Doc's legacy, no one brings up his ABA stats. But let's move on, though, man, because I was going to ask you a couple more questions about the Lakers, about Powell being benched. And
that game had flow.
The Lakers rebuffing trades for him. The Lakers basically stink, and I say that as a Lakers fan. There's so many issues that I'm not going to spend a half hour talking about them. But what's your opinion of what's going on in L.A.?
Yeah, reports, you know, that we're getting from the people we talk to is that they've gotten some offers for Pau Gasol and they're turning them down. I don't necessarily think that means that Pau won't ultimately get traded. It may be just that they haven't gotten the right offer yet. So they're going to rebuff the trade and act like they're all in Pau's corner, but I wouldn't be surprise if before the trade deadline, Powell was gone. He's been sitting on the bench down the stretch of recent games because D'Antoni says that the offense is too slow. I guess, and if you're sitting on the bench, then you're saying it's slow because of Paul Gasol, saying that the team is too slow. So if you're going to sit one of your best players on the bench in important situations of the game, if you have the power to do it as head coach now, why wouldn't you get rid of him? If you're not going to use him like you're supposed to use him. D'Antoni said that he thinks the post-up game is not as efficient as everybody thinks it is. So it seems to me that he really doesn't, with his style, his system, he really doesn't respect what Powell brings to the table anyway. So
I'm laughing at John. John said that Gasol's not hurt. He's been benched by either D'Antoni or Kobe, one or the other. Just to end our Lakers talk, Kevin Lang checked in via Twitter. He says and he wants to talk about he says to Willie G, Jordan never broke up his teams and Kobe did. That's the difference there.
That's more ridiculousness. You know what I'm saying? If a team if the team's not getting along, they chose him. Hey. Shaq and Kobe, somebody had to go. They weren't going to keep paying both of those guys what they were paying them anyway. And it's a no-brainer to keep the younger guy who had more basketball in front of him. So,
No doubt.
Broke up the team.
Just wanted to bring that up because people giving us feedback from Twitter or whatever. But I'm tired of talking about the Lakers because they're pissing me off right now. I'm going to ask you a question, yes or no. Can Memphis win the NBA title with their roster?
Got to say more than a yes or no, but I'll keep it brief. Memphis, I think, has the talent to bring home an NBA title, man. Memphis is a very tough team, a big team. You know me, Jimmy. I've been preaching to people for the last 4 years about that trade, the whole Pau Gasol trade, because people only look at things in that absolute moment and don't understand the business of basketball. And the fact that you said, just like the Lakers are one of the most hated teams in sports, so people looked at it more as, okay, you're helping the Lakers win a title. When Memphis wasn't helping the Lakers get a title, the Lakers just had the best deal for them. But people look at the names in the deal, like Kwame Brown, this and that. Kwame Brown never represented Kwame Brown in that trade. Kwame Brown represented over $9 million of salary cap space that, without that, they wouldn't have Zebo on the team right now. Pau Gasol brother, in my opinion, is not much less of a player than Pau Gasol, and I think he's much tougher. So, you know, him coming from that trade helps them build. They got some rookies out of that trade. A few of them aren't there anymore, like Grievous Vasquez. He was one of the last people from the picks that they got. Darrell Arthur came from that trade. The team was built, and that trade was the catalyst of it. So all the people who run around saying, oh, that trade was stupid, like, I'm just going to tell you straight up that you don't know what you're talking about. And look at the team now. They were looking towards their future. They weren't worried about what the Lakers were doing. The Lakers were one piece away from a championship. When you're making a trade with a team, you can't take that into consideration. You're trying to help yourself for the future. You can't help the fact that this team is one piece away from a championship.
So to look answer at them the now. Question, you think they are able to win a title?
I think they're tough. I think they are tough, man. There's not a lot of teams that can beat you down low like this team. Then you got the quiet superstars and Rudy Gay. Even the dude we give grief is getting much better, the point guard. And
yo,
I think
that was
Memphis,
my point. My point is I want them to win just because Mike Conley, B. Austin made some disparaging remarks about Mike Conley. You can listen to the clip. It's on our SoundCloud. It's on our SoundCloud page. But B. Austin talked about just how bad Mike Conley is, and Mike Conley will win of the clip via Twitter and favorite it. Like he has something to prove. He followed.
I
want to
get him on the show. I want to get him on the show.
I know that. You know, he's listening, and I want him to win just because of that. Because I want to hear what B. Austin got to say. Because I was kind of defending him, like, you know, he's not that bad. Because B. Austin said he might be the worst starting point guard in the entire NBA. Well, anyway, so
Memphis is tough, man. I think they can. You know, they're gonna have a tough time with a quicker team like OKC, but they can bludgeon you down low, man. I think they can. They would be a great matchup for the Heat because they have what the Heat lack, and they could try to exploit those weaknesses. So, yeah. I said yes after I said 5,000 words.
All that being said, I asked you for yes or no. My man is winning for 10 minutes. But Gerald Wallace fined $5,000 for flopping. He's the second repeat offender.
Not flopping. The first repeat offender is on his team, Reggie Evans.
Yo, Reggie Evans is worse than me, yo, because Reggie Evans, man, be flying everywhere. Reggie Evans has always been one of the worst floppers, so it's no surprise that he was the first.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Gerald Wallace's flop came on when he was guarding LeBron James, so you know the league was looking at that a little closer. But, stop flopping.
Anyway, man, that's the end of our NBA rap for this show. Let's talk a little football, though.
Let's talk. Yeah, we got a few things in football we definitely need to be talking about. Football, our football wrap today is brought to you by Fanatics. For the best in your favorite team's merchandise and apparel, shop Fanatics. Shopping Fanatics is easy. Just go to our website at warroomsports.com and click on the Fanatics logo on our main page or on our sponsors page and get the latest in NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, NCAA, man, UFC gear, and more. Ah, the NFL. It was a great, great week in the NFL. Rookie quarterback shine. They shine brightly. You had Andrew Luck finishing off the Jags on the last play of the game. You had Russell Wilson finishing off the Chicago Bears on the last play of the game in an overtime game. You had RG3 shining on Monday Night Football. What do you think so far of this draft class of quarterbacks? Because every time they have every time they accomplish something else, you hear people saying, "Well, can this class be better than the class of '83?" What's your brief opinion on that, Jim?
I think only time will tell. It's too soon to try to talk about them and how they'll fare all time. It kind of irritates me.
Exactly. That's why we're going to keep this portion brief.
Last year,
no
Cam
sense.
Was going to revolutionize the game of football, and now no one's paying him anymore. So, you have to give these guys time. Some of these people are out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they look productive.
Specifically,
and for me,
people in
for
Washington.
Me and you have talked offline. We always talk about how, I feel sorry for the guys coming after them because now it's going to be, you have to produce right away. You don't even get time to grow as a quarterback anymore. When I came up, my quarterback stunk their first year. I mean, they had to learn the position and learn the speed of the game. Now you're expected to compete right away. Going back to Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers, it's not just this year. It's the last several years. Quarterbacks have to play right away and contend. So I can only imagine the pressure that the Matt Barkley's and the guys coming in next year. But at the end of the day, give these guys some time. Stop it with this comparing. I've seen RG3 compared to Elway. Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning, there's a reason that you see that comparison. That makes sense. But all the other stuff, come on, man. Russell Wilson compared to Dan Marino. What?
Yeah. So like you said, the Luck-Peyton Manning thing, it's a direct comparison because they play for the same team. They both were the number one overall pick. There are going to be comparisons there because they're basically going to say what this guy did in a Colts helmet versus what this guy did in a Colts helmet. I think the guys are playing great. And like you said, only time could tell, how they're going to fare against the class of 83. In that class you had Elway, you had Marino, Kelly, Eason. You had a lot of guys in that class, O'Brien, who played in a lot of Super Bowls, who won several Super Bowls. It's just no way that you can even start comparing these classes. Right, I'm not one of those people that don't believe that two athletes or two teams or two anything in any sport can't be compared. I think everything could be compared, but I think you have to give these guys more than 12 games in order to do so. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but they haven't even finished the full season.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You haven't finished the full season, and that brings me to my next point. After only 12 games in the league, Michael Wilbon said on PTI the other day that Robert Griffin III is the best player in the NFL and should be the NFL MVP. What were your thoughts when you heard those comments?
All right, my thoughts were, you're a Richard Rider, and my other thoughts were as follows. They should be ashamed of your-
ashamed of themselves. Every Redskin fan who tried to justify it and act like he had some kind of a point. First of all, I think statements like that and the fact that fans even co-sign it is unfair, first and foremost, to RG3. You know what I'm saying? He's a great young player. You know, through his first 12 games, he has looked great, you know, in the league. Just like any rookie, he has a lot of things that he still needs to work on. But everybody's in the excitement of the moment. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But you don't expect a veteran of the media, such as Wilbon, to be that caught up in the excitement of any moment. But at the same time, he's made shock value comments like this before. So maybe you do expect that from somebody like Wilbon. You know what I mean? But I just think it's a silly thing to say. Like, let alone being the best player in the league, I don't think he's anywhere near the top of you know, the way people are playing the QB position right now. There are several people in the league playing the quarterback position better than RG3, and I think one rookie in his class is even one of them. People are going to look at RG3 versus Andrew Luck, and, you know, they're just going to look at ratings and things like that, but they're not putting in context the difference in their offenses. RG3 is running a very conservative offense right now. In my opinion, I think he's talented enough to run a big boy offense, but I just don't think the Shanahans are doing it. I think the game where they let him loose the most was the Dallas Cowboys game on Thanksgiving, and he absolutely lit those cats up.
Man,
but after Monday night, after the Monday night game, you know, when Wilbon and everybody in the DMV got super excited, Robert threw, what was his numbers, 13 for 21 for 163 yards. And 72 yards rushing, and he had one touchdown. But people viewed that game as if it was the Michael Vick game against the Washington Redskins in 2010. Now, I know a lot of people from Washington are listening. They think I'm saying that because I'm an Eagles fan. First of all, I don't think Michael Vick's a good quarterback. Never thought he was a good quarterback. I'm speaking on that one game where it was right for anybody to get hype and excited because – what he did in that game was crazy, accounting for 6 total touchdowns. But people were excited. He threw for 163 yards. And I think nobody's giving Alfred Morris the props that he deserves in helping RG3 what he's doing this year because with the pistol and the options that they're running, none of that works if the defense isn't showing ultimate respect to Alfred Morris because the play action isn't going to work. The options aren't going to work because they're going to keep keying on RG3. But I'm going to let you rock because I know I'm rambling and I know the DC fans getting they're boiling at every point that I make.
My whole thing is this. Alfred Morris runs like slavery's on the other side of wherever he's going. He's running for his freedom. Mm-hmm. If you look at it, where he was drafted versus where RG3 was in their production, he's actually the more impressive rookie. RG3, I'm actually rooting for the guy. Well, I can't say I'm completely rooting for him until he cuts off that Whoopi Goldberg hair. But I want to see him do well, but Redskins fans make it difficult for you to want to see him do well because some of the analogies and the juxtapositions they use, RG3 is John Elway, and RG3, it's like, yo, my man ain't played one full season. I mean, you just don't know, and, you know, this whole rush to make him so great, and he doesn't have the numbers to back it up. But the thing about this Monday night game is it was bound to happen whether they, like, anyway, because before the game they were already making these comparisons and saying how great he was. All they had to do was win that game. It didn't matter how he played. People were telling me that he's so good that his fumbles turn into touchdowns. Like, he did that on purpose. It's just crazy the kind of hype that you see around him. I think he's a great player. I think in terms of rookie of the year, it probably should be split, and I know they're going to hate me for saying that, but Andrew Luck's also playing out of his mind, actually playing better football, in my opinion, than RG3. My whole thing is, let's just wait and see how good this guy is before, you know, you crown him, you know. You want to crown him, go ahead and crown his ass, but at the end of the day, you know, he's not the best player in the league. He might not even be the best player in his team, and you're calling him the best player in the league. You're disrespecting the game of football.
Now, to Washington fans' credit, you know what I'm saying? They haven't had a quarterback good enough for them to rally around in a long time, if, like you said, if ever. You know, you got Joe Theismann back in the day. He wasn't, you know, they weren't this excited about him. He wasn't that good. You go way back in the day, they had Sonny Jurgensen. I can't even say, nobody can sit here and be honest and say that they were excited about Doug Williams, because the year they won the Super Bowl, he took over late. So this is the first time they've had somebody to really rally around. And this kind of, his game right now, as well as the hype that's surrounding him in his particular city, kind of reminds me of a young Donovan McNabb. I don't know. Eagles fans were definitely captivated. I'm not going to sit here and say anything otherwise. I don't know if it was on the same level as RG3, because, you know, we had somebody like that in Philly before in Randall Cunningham that was just as, if not more exciting than Donovan McNabb.
More exciting.
A lot of his early success came from dink and dunking the ball, throwing very short passes, and a lot of running and excitement that the fans could get around and rally around. At the same time, when comparing them both, I think RG3 is a bit more accurate than McNabb was at that time. And, of course, he's faster, but he really reminds me of a young Donovan McNabb at the time. And I hope that this offense, I hope that they plan to move on. I hope this is just a bring them along slowly type offense. I hope they plan to move on, because it'll get to a point, as like it did with Donovan McNabb, when the coach finally wants to open it up and make the offense a little more professional. You know, this guy really didn't have the training to make all of the throws at every given moment that he needed, even though in a lot of people's eyes, Donovan McNabb turned out to be a great quarterback. He turned out to be, you know, a good winner with all the almost championships that the Eagles had, you know, so he gets a lot of credit for that.
This kind of goes to the point of wanting to compete right now instead of letting them grow and become the best they can be, because, you know, they put him in a position where he doesn't make a lot of mistakes because of the offense they're running, but we don't know whether it's stunting his growth as a quarterback.
I would venture to say that it is, because once they do get a lot of pieces around him, when the team is going to be ready to make that run, you know what I'm saying, you can't always depend on him running with the football. You saw that with Michael Vick. Even before Michael Vick slowed down, defenses figured out, you know, ways to stop that and try to force Michael Vick to pass the ball to beat you. Now, I think he's a much better passer even at this point than Michael Vick was, but at the same time, I think what they're doing now with this pistol and this option, I think this is like the Wildcat a few years ago. It was the hot thing. You know, everybody loved it. Who's doing it now? Because you really can't. Because defenses catch up to that. Defensive coordinators.
The next thing coming out. But, you know, I guess it's one of those things, like last year with the Broncos, they kind of neutered their entire offense to play, you know, Tim Tebow style. And that's kind of where the league is now. Like, the Cats are expected to win now. So it used to be a days back where you let your offense gel and learn to play together, playing more the pro style. Now, as you put together whatever offense you can just to get the win, so to speak. I don't know how he'll fare. I see your comparisons with McNabb, but I think that the Washington fans are a lot more delusional than the Philadelphia fans were, and that's saying a lot. The little dink and dunks and the runs, I mean, I see that. It's just, you know, and like I said, Randall was more exciting, and the fact of the matter is they've never had a transcendent athlete like an RG3. All the quarterbacks you mentioned, even talking about Mark Rippon and Doug Williams, who were, you know, a solid quarterback, they weren't like a superstar, so to speak. I mean, he reminds me of Sister Mary Clarice, because he won't cut that damn hair. But you know,
it's just funny to me to see fans chanting RG3 after the game and MVP and this and that when the dude just threw for 163 yards.
Because it also goes to winning.
I'm sure I'm a hater for saying that. But
winning heals everything, man. It doesn't matter if he would have put up 1 yard or he could have put up a negative passing yards. The fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, man, it's like we talked about earlier. When we appeared on the Outsports.com podcast, we were talking about how winning could just change everything.
Right.
Washington is a football town. They don't care about the Wizards. I mean, they really don't care about the baseball team either. That was fraudulent. They care about the Redskins, though. And the fact of the matter is, they're winning a little bit now, and he's like the face of the franchise.
Speaking
he can go wrong. He,
in that game traffic Monday night, I saw somebody with RG3 on their license plate. That's too much.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he can do no wrong in that city now. He probably can spit on babies and get away with it. Like, that's where he is with that fan base.
He can criticize Obama.
Yeah, I just don't want. I don't know. He's another one. They own his pipe too. But I just don't want them to Richard Rye in this much, and for him to have a letdown or take a step back or regress or whatever it may be, and you know, because this is what they're setting him up for.
You know
people
how it
to
is,
build you up, just to watch you fall.
People like us, who praise the man, but you know, can tell you flaws or tell you that you know to calm down a little bit. We're the haters, but everybody else. You know, like you said, they're setting them up. They when they build you up, the teardown is ugly. The teardown is always ugly. So, you know, I wish the young man luck. You know, I hope he has and one day becomes what Wilbon says he is after 12 games. But there's no way. There's no way in hell right now that RG3 is the best player in the NFL, man.
And to all the fans out there listening, and I know it's thousands of you because I could tell by the tweets, the Facebook messages and all, I just want you to know, when you call me, this is Jimmy, by the way, when you personally call me a hater, it's appreciated, because guess what? You're right. I am a hater. I have no problem with being called a hater, because I hate ignorance. And that's what I see a lot of times, man, you know, when talking about these players.
Yeah, well, real quick, because we're about to go off the air, speaking of that game, though, that game did... You know, it did put the NFC East back in play. Dallas went and put the NFC East back in play as well. Dallas and Washington are both sitting 6-6 behind the 7-5 New York Giants. Now, we know the Giants and their inconsistency in the regular season. Just real quick, do you think that the Giants will pull out the division, or do you think Dallas or Washington? Because only one team's coming out of this division. Who do you think it's going to be?
I still believe it'll be the Giants because they have Eli Artistic Manning. I think they'll find a way to pull it out. Dallas
right.
thinks Washington, it'll be interesting, but they have to play the Ravens, and that's a tough game. And I just think that the Giants will find a way. They have the talent. They are the defending champs, so I'll give them the benefit
right.
of the doubt. You know, say they'll win.
Okay. And I agree with you on that one. Like I said, they're very inconsistent, but the Giants always seem to find a way to win when they have to find a way to win. So even though I don't have it in front of me, but I think their remaining schedule is a little more difficult than the teams that are chasing them. I still think those teams are more likely in a must-win situation to make a mistake than the New York Giants. Some quarterbacks are being, let's say, some coaches are sticking with some quarterbacks this week. Rex Ryan, even though he benched him in favor of McElroy, he's sticking with Sanchez. Andy Reid has decided to stick with Nick Foles throughout the rest of the season, and Harbaugh, of course, is sticking with Kaepernick after he had his first game where it wasn't as successful as the last few. My quick opinion on those, Rex Ryan and Andy Reid are probably both about to lose their jobs. Ryan may get another shot at it, but truthfully, if Tim Tebow is still hurt, I'd probably go back to Sanchez, too. I mean, McElroy led the team to one touchdown. It's not like he came off the bench and lit the world on fire. So I don't see anything wrong with going back to Sanchez, but he might hitch his trailer to that truck, and it might get him run out of town. Andy Reid, he must be under pressure from the organization, or they must be telling him that he might be able to stay, because the only way you continue to start Foles is because you're looking at him for next year. Now, if Andy, I don't know if he thinks he's going to be around next year or if this is a situation where, you know, the organization is forcing them to do it. And then you got the Kaepernick thing. What are you take us
quick,
out, Jim.
I think all three coaches are ludicrous. I have two quick questions for you. Who wins the game first, the Eagles or the Flyers?
I think the Eagles will get one, man. They'll get one.
Okay, that's somewhere. Kyrie in the chat room. And also, do you think Andrew Bynum will play before the Eagles win a game again?
Sheesh. I got the Eagles on that one, too, man. They're going to get one. They're going to get one more this season.
Yo, somebody sent me a pic last night of Andrew Bynum in the club in Philly. I'm like, well, I think dancing in the club, that's neither here nor there.
Hey,
anyway,
we got less than 60, and we want people to hear this new song that we got here.
Yeah, you already know, man.
Get us out of here.
Thanks for joining us again in the War Room. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, Facebook, Twitter, everybody that held us down all throughout the universe online. You know, check us next week. You know what I mean? You want to see us Sunday at URL Armageddon. We'll be in the house. Other than that, you know where to find us online. And until next time, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We're out of here.
Know the blueprint,
yo.
Every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, Be Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. If not, dial.
Call it
323-0012. If you're going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, the tough push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-Flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cat? You better name us.
War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.